If you'd like to turn with me to Daniel 12 again, we tend to go back there regularly with this series on the wisdom in the book of Proverbs. But the reason why I do go back to Daniel chapter 12 is just to remind us why it's so important that we look at the book of Proverbs and look at wisdom and at this particular juncture in history. Because as it says in verse 1 of chapter 12, it says, "And at that time..." And the context is coming right to the very end of a prophecy, the longest prophecy in the Bible, that takes us right from the time of Babylon all the way through to the present day. And he says, "At that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to the same time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone that's found written in the book." Now that particular time is yet ahead of us with the Great Tribulation. But it is a time which is, there's never been a time like it before, there never will be a time like it again. It is really a unique time in all of history. And as we're living right now, looking at the arrival of this particular time, the events that we see within the world should be telling us things. We should be able to see within events within the world telling us the nearness of the time that we're actually living in. And quite frankly, you've got to have a certain degree of wisdom to be able to look at the world's situation and be able to notice just what in fact is going on. It says in verse 4, it says, "But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end, that many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." And certainly, my voice now goes out into the internet and across the world, the fact that it's being recorded at the moment and it can be therefore posted on a website, these things are amazing. You talk to one of the apostles, the early apostles, about what we're able to do and how we're actually able to keep. We had an apostle that was for the end time, and we still have his words. We still have, we can still see him in video. We still have his written word, which is available across the world. Anybody really who's across the world that has access to the internet can read those words, and we're able to still put those words out. When in their day, everything was being handwritten, everything was being copied out meticulously. We do live in an amazing, amazing time. And yet it says this: the book was to be sealed until the time of the end, when this amazing time would suddenly come into the fore. And during this time of rapid communication and science, which is what we've got, which is what he's talking about here in chapter 4, this is the prelude before this time of trouble. It was never... since there was a nation, even to the same time, and at that time your people shall be delivered. And the ones who are going to be delivered, if in verse 10 it says, "Many shall be purified and made white and tried, tested." And it parallels with Revelation 11, which talks about the temple being built, the scattering that has taken place, really is a time of testing, and time of testing for the temple to be prepared. And it says, "Many shall be purified and made white and tried and tested. But the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand. But the wise shall understand." Now, if we go back to Proverbs again, and right at the beginning of Proverbs, we've really gone through already. We've gone through the first 9 chapters, and we've touched on certain portions of the other chapters, but... those 9 chapters that we've gone through are really the introduction to the book of Proverbs. It says in verse 1, in chapter 1, it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, and perceive the words of understanding." And that, introduces introduces the introduction, really. But that introduction to the book of Proverbs, the chapters 1 to 9, sets the basic theme, and it's a very ancient portion of the book. Then we come to chapter 10, and all the way through to chapter 22, we've got actually, as it says in chapter 10, verse 1, it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father," and so on. These are the actual specific Proverbs of Solomon. He set in order many, many Proverbs and songs as well, but this is the next passage or segment of Proverbs that we'll be going into, and the Proverbs of Solomon himself. Then in chapter 22, all the way through to chapter 24, you get the wise ones, and particularly the wise ones of Egypt. They've found the... we've been through all this already to some degree. And then chapter 24, the end of chapter 24, you get the wise ones themselves. These are other proverbs that have been set in order. And then we go back to Solomon again in chapter 25 to 29, but these are ones of Solomon that Hezekiah added to them. So, because Solomon wrote many more proverbs than he included in the chapters 10 to 22. But Hezekiah added more. Then you chapter 30, Proverbs of Agur, and then chapter 31, Lemuel's mother, which is probably Bathsheba, Lemuel being the king. But you know, we come into the Proverbs proper in chapter 10, and you get individual proverbs being given, such as it says, Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. So it has a contrasting between two thoughts there. And this is the essence of a proverb. It's a very pithy saying that you can almost you can write down in a few words, less than a dozen words in most cases. Words that you can remember, something you can put in the back of your mind, and something you bring to mind later on, and when the certain circumstances come up, so that you place them into the right context. And therefore, when you are coming across a situation where you need wisdom, a proverb should pop into your mind. It's something that's more likely to pop into your mind than a great discourse that you'll find within Scripture. And in these proverbs proper, if you turn over to Isaiah 27, this particular section, and as I said, talking of Daniel 12, we're looking at the tribulation coming, we're looking at the end time events, you're looking at the fact that the wise will understand and none of the wicked will understand at that time, and the need for wisdom at this juncture in history. And here in Isaiah 27, notice in verse 1, it says, in that day the Eternal with his sore and great strong sword will punish Leviathan. This serpent in the sea. Now, you wonder whether, in fact, it's referring to Satan or one of the demons of Satan, but certainly, probably is talking about Satan. Verse 2, in that day, sing you unto her a vineyard of red wine. And remember, who is this coming from? Bozrah, with garments dyed with blood, basically. In verse 12, it says, and it shall come to pass in that day that the Eternal shall beat off from the channel of the river unto the streams of Egypt, and be gathered one by one, O ye children of Israel. So Israel will be gathered again at the end of the tribulation, as you go into the day of the Lord, or part of the day of the Lord, in fact. And in verse 13, it is very clear regarding the time frame. It says, and it shall come to pass in that day that the great trumpet shall be blown, and they shall come that were ready to perish in the land of Assyria. So the last trump will take place. And at that time, this is the context that you find as you're going into chapter 28. It's chapter 28 I want to really hone in on, because it says in verse 5, it says, in that day shall the Eternal of hosts be for a crown of glory and for a diadem of beauty to the residue of his people. So again, that same time, that end time, is what is being talked about. And it says, but they also... it just says in verse 6, it says, and for a spirit of judgment to him that sits in judgment. And let's face it, we are having to judge the time that we're in at this present time, and we are going to be, in the future, sitting in judgment as kings and priests in the future. And for a strength to those that turn the battle to the gate. In other words, you chase the enemy back to their stronghold, and you put the battle in their court. You display the... If the battle is verbal and mental, you show very clearly where they're wrong, and where they're out of line. And as it goes on into this section, notice in verse 10, it explains how do you actually... it talks about the tables of vomit and the food and how there's no place clean, and you cannot get clean food from a table that's filled with vomit. It's a very graphic way of expressing it. But unfortunately, so much of what we find today, spiritually, is vomit. As you find in the article, I think Mr. Henderson wrote in actually cited this week regarding the I think it was the women bishops. They happened to be reading the passage in Timothy that talks about how it doesn't allow a woman to speak in church, and you have a woman having authority over a man. And they therefore just got rid of the reading for the day, because it happened to conflict and with the ideas that they had. And they said that basically, the Bible is just a load of fables anyway. And it's unfortunate that so many people, as far as they are concerned, took the Bible literally. And that concept, that it in fact is, it's a bunch of fables anyway, and therefore we can just simply throw it out, is a table of vomit. It's not the Word of God. It's not going to the Word of God and being instructed by that Word of God. But the way in which you do it, the way in which you understand, and this is the way that Mr. Armstrong looked at Scripture and was able to understand the Scriptures and put the Scriptures together in the right way, was that precept first of all, who shall he teach knowledge in verse 9? Who shall he make to understand doctrine? But those that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. In other words, you're having to understand it in a way that is not a childlike way, not just a childish reading of Scriptures. But for precept must be on precept upon precept, line upon line. Now, you're actually studying, and this is where we come to the book of Proverbs. You see, when you're looking at Proverbs, the Proverbs are scattered throughout the book. They're all on different subjects. And to get the information out of the book of Proverbs at this stage, having read the first 9 chapters, which has a certain amount of story flow, you then come into the Proverbs themselves. And the Proverbs themselves have got to be understood in a slightly different way. You've got to, therefore, look at the book. You know, supposing you and I have a problem, and we go to God, as it says in James 1. It says, look, go to God and ask for wisdom, and he'll give you wisdom. Okay, but part of that giving you of wisdom is that you can go to the book of Proverbs and understand the book. And to understand the book, it's precept upon precept, proverb upon proverb in that sense. Precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. For with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people. That's how God has spoken within Scripture. And I've brought out many times, it's very similar to the way DNA is actually constructed. DNA is not constructed in a nice, orderly sequence. DNA is constructed here a little, there a little. It's in folds. And as the folds touch, so that it jumps from one to another. Now, it's almost a three-dimensional pattern, and it's the facets of Scripture. You can read the same Scripture coming from different directions in 2, 3, 4, 5 different ways, going on to 10, 15, 20 different subjects. And so too with the book of Proverbs as well. You start to understand it in a completely different way. But here a little, there a little, for with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people. And he said, for the word of the Eternal was to them precept upon precept, line upon line. And apparently it is almost like a drunken poem, this in the original Hebrew. So in other words, it talks about woe to the pride, to the drunkards of Ephraim, whose glorious beauty is a fading flower. In other words, it's like somebody who is drunk. And unfortunately, their tables of vomit are from somebody who is drunk, and those who have their tables of vomit cannot go ahead and get the instruction out of it by precept. It sounds like a gibberish, and this is why it says, the word of the Eternal was to them, precept on precept, precept on precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little, that they may go, fall backwards, be broken, snared, and taken. And it goes on into verse 17, judgment. And that's what we're talking about. Judgment also I'll lay to the line, righteousness to the plummet, and the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies. One of the final plagues that will occur will be the hail. And that will sweep away the refuge of lies, because it's talking again to those that actually As it says in verse 14, hear the word of the Eternal, you scornful men that rule this people that is in Jerusalem. They rule within the church, unfortunately. And unfortunately, this is a problem within the church today. There's some are not going to be wise. They're not going to have right judgment. They're not going to correctly discern. So it's a very important subject, the book of Proverbs, a very important subject, the understanding of wisdom and gaining of wisdom. We go to God and ask him for wisdom. But he has given us a book, a specific book, a book of wisdom. That's Proverbs and also Ecclesiastes as well. But judgment, in verse 17, judgment are laid to the lion and righteousness to the plummet, says the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies. And the waters shall overflow the hiding place, and your covenant with death will be disannulled. Your agreement with hell, or the grave, shall not stand. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, then you shall be trodden down by it. From the time that it goes forth, it shall take you from morning to morning, shall it pass over you by day and by night, and so on. And the tribulation will, in fact, have its effect. Because, again, God doesn't want us to go through the tribulation. Doesn't want his people to go through the tribulation at all. He doesn't want Laodicea to have to go through the tribulation. But if that is the only way that they are going to go ahead and understand, then he's got to. He's got no alternative. We need, we have got to have the judgment to take the battle to the gate, to go ahead and deal with nations in the future. You know, you're going to be given jurisdiction over 5 cities, over 10 cities, over 1 city. And you're going to have the wisdom, you're going to have the judgment to do that. And that is being developed today. They need to know what kind of direction the mind of God goes in, so that we are going to be ruling as in a united way. Now, as it says in verse 26, it says, for God does instruct him into discretion and does teach him. And this is talking about the harvest time, and this in fact is the way different people are harvested. You know, God is instructing us about the way in which we harvest physically, yes, but he's also the way he harvests spiritually. And the spiritual harvest is some are very gently treated, others have got to have a much firmer treatment, otherwise they can't be harvested. And that's the distinction between them. And the judgment is crucial. This is the crucial area and wisdom. Now, having said that, so when we're looking at Proverbs proper from about chapter 10 all the way on, when we're looking at Proverbs proper, we've got to use this process of here a little, there a little, precept upon precept, line upon line, very much so within the book. But having said that, as I've said also before, it's a multidimensional thing. It's you also have to take into account the context in certain instances. Let's give you an example. Proverbs 25. Let's have a look at Proverbs 25. It says in verse 16, it says, have you found honey? Eat so much as sufficient for you, lest you be filled therewith and vomit it. And you think, that's daft. It's a proverb. You know, what kind of proverb is that? You know, have you found honey? You only eat as much. Is it all about honey? How much sugar you eat? That, you know, you've got to lay off the Mars bars. Is that what it's telling us? I mean, is that the principle behind the proverb? Well, there's a great deal more to it. If you just read the one proverb, have you found honey? Eat as much as sufficient for you, lest you be filled therewith and vomit it. You looking at the entire subject in a very strange way. You're giving an equality to the concepts within Proverbs, which is very physical, contrasted with some profound instruction that you found within the book. Well, the way you can understand it, though, is when you understand it a little bit more. Let's pick it up from verse 11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. Now, the word comes out of your mouth, and it's just right. A word fitly spoken. It's not just a word that comes out of the mouth. It's a word that is fitly spoken, that is spoken in the right way. As an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, also as a wise reprover upon an obedient ear. So you get the right person with an obedient ear, with an ear that's going to listen to you. And if you're wise and your words, you choose your words very carefully, and you give the right kind of reproof, Who was saying about, we were talking earlier about a minister who, in fact, when they were counselling with somebody, he would ask questions all the time. And in asking questions, you'd come to the conclusion yourself as to what was right and what was wrong. You just by asking the right question. An earring of gold in an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover to an obedient ear. So you've got an ear that's obedient and you're asking the right questions, and that is a reproof. But when the person goes away, they don't feel as if they've been reproved. They feel if they've been helped. But it's the right word at the right time, and just the right amount. As cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him. So for he refreshes the soul of his masters. It's having it just right. So he's sent in on an errand, and he does the errand. And I always remember, I think I've brought it out before, one time in my nursery garden, on the nursery school garden, we're each given an area of soil to weed. And the soil was actually the cracks in a crazy paving path. And I weeded my patch and pulled every single weed out and got the thing right flat to the ground. But one of my colleagues, he not only did that, but he also dug it over as well. And he got praised by the mistress, the mistress who gave us the job to do. What a good job he did. And I thought, what a load of rubbish. I was told to weed, not to dig it. But, this is what I was saying. The cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. He goes above and beyond. Above and beyond doing, but without going ridiculous, you do it just right. You hold it just right. Whoever boasts himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. By long forbearance on a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. Again, what we're looking at, just the right word that is actually given. A soft tongue breaks the bone. And then comes this verse. Have you found honey? Eat so much as is sufficient for you, lest you be filled therewith and vomit it. In other words, you get it just enough, no more, no less, just enough. And it says, withdraw your foot from your neighbor's house, lest he be wearied of you and so hate you. Just enough, no more. In other words, you put your foot, you be neighborly, you go around to somebody, you spend time with them, you give them, you talk together, but you don't overdo it. You don't overdo it. It's the same with the words that are being, like a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. It's fitly spoken. It's doing just enough. It's not having it too much. So the context is important. Each of those was a proverb, but each of them are also linked together. They're linked together, and certainly reading that one, have you found honey, eat as much as sufficient for you, lest you be filled with it and vomit. That's not talking about honey. It's talking about words. It's talking about the time that we spend with other people. It's talking about going around to somebody's house. It's talking about doing things which are in balance and making sure that we do things in balance. Now, the principle of honey applies as well, so physically. But it's the context. It gives the breadth of meaning in that particular case. And so when we read the book of Proverbs, yes, we read it here a little, there a little, precept upon precept, line upon line. And we do it in that way from about chapter 10 all the way on. But it is more than that. We understand that there is a multifaceted approach as well. We understand that the context is there also that we need to have a look at. So we do both. And in doing both, we get the wisdom. We extract the maximum amount of wisdom out of the Proverbs themselves, which is what we're looking for. So today what I want to do is I want to show how to take a subject and apply wisdom profitably to it, the wisdom of Proverbs profitably to it. If we turn over to Revelation chapter 3, again, concentrating on this aspect that we're at the end time, wisdom is clearly important according to the book of Daniel at this particular juncture. We've got things that are coming up on the radar as far as the world situation is concerned. We've got things happening within our lives, quite frankly, but as far as the church is concerned. We are in a shattered condition right now. We need wisdom. All of us need wisdom to steer our way through this. We need to be in contact with God, clearly in contact with God. The fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom. We've covered that in the preceding chapters that we've been reading. But here in Revelation 3, it says, in the problem with Laodicea, one of the problems is because you say, not only are they neither cold nor hot, they're lukewarm, but it says in verse 17, it says, because you say, now here is, this is what Laodicea is actually saying in Revelation 3, verse 17. You say, I'm rich, I'm increased with goods, I have need of nothing. You know not that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. I counsel of you to buy of me gold tried in the fire. In other words, you go through the tribulation, you go through trial. That you may be rich, and white raiment that you may be clothed, and that the shame of your naked does not appear, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. There's a problem with their view of wealth. Their view of wealth. It's got to be talking about physical wealth in some description here. I know your works that you're neither cold nor hot yet, but because you say, we're saying, I'm rich, increased with goods, and have need of nothing. I know not that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Now, if you and I go down the supermarket today in the Western world, we can go and buy things that, the application of science and technology in agriculture, in transportation, in organization, has meant a world in which we can buy things that are just amazing, astounding. I mean, Solomon, in all his glory, not only was he not arrayed like a lily, he could not go down to his Asda and buy what we can buy. He just simply couldn't do it. He could go and get his peacocks and chimps and apes and so on from an ivory and bring those back to him. But it took him years to get those back. He couldn't get an orange back. I mean, in Israel, you can grow oranges. And in fact, down in the Dead Sea, you can grow bananas even. But he couldn't get the kind of things out of season that you and I can. And we can go down to Sainsbury's, we can go down to Walmart in America or wherever, and we can buy things which are astounding, absolutely astounding. That the rest of, when you talk to the apostles yesteryear, they will be astounded by what is available to us. We are rich. We are increased with goods. There is no doubt about that, physically speaking. But we do need a great deal. That's the difference. That's the problem. And so what I want to do today is take the subject of a wise view of wealth and go through the books, the various proverbs that we can find on the wise view of wealth, and just read some of the proverbs and just start to get a little bit more wisdom in this area. Because, as I say, it's an area that seems to be a problem, that there is not a wise view of wealth. Because you say I'm rich, increased with goods, but I have need of nothing, and don't know that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. You don't see the spiritual side of things. You're looking at things physically. You're looking at, you're not hot or cold in spiritual areas. You're just lukewarm and insipid. And so it is certainly an applicable area for us to look at. Now, one thing we can understand regarding wealth and righteousness and so on, as far as wealth is concerned, wealth is produced by the trade of goods, and the reason why we can go down to Asda is because we've got money, and we can go down and pay the money and get the various goods that we want. And one thing that Mr. Armstrong brought out, he brought out in a number of locations. He brought it out in co-worker letters, he brought it out into good news articles. He also brought it out in the autobiography in chapter 12. There's this incident that happened with Mr. Babson, and it's very important that we understand, I think, a little bit more about it, because what happened in post-war prosperity, what happened to that post-war prosperity when it collapsed and led to the Second World War, quite frankly, appears destined to happen again. That's what appears to be on the horizon. So if we're watching and looking and witnessing what's happening, we're witnessing very much a repeat of what happened in the 20s and 30s. But it says, in January 1920, the well-known statistician Roger Babson was the speaker at one of our Association of Commerce luncheons, then being held in Wednesday in the Cameo Room in the Morrison Hotel. This is in Chicago. And we were then at the very height of a wave of post-war prosperity. So there's all kinds of noises being made at the moment, saying that we're about to turn the corner, and you know, this prosperity is just around, just about to happen, and all this kind of thing. And yet, Mr. Babson said, "Gentlemen," said Mr. Babson, "we're about to enter the worst business depression that our generation has ever experienced. I advise you to notice what he advised. I advise you to set your houses in order. I advise against any further plans of expansion until the depression has passed over." So that was his warning to them. Seated at tables in the large room were leading bankers, business executives of Chicago, and I glanced around and I saw amused smirks animate the faces of many prominent men. So they did not believe him. You couldn't understand what on earth he was talking about. Then the depression actually struck at the middle of 1920, I think it was, or towards the end of 1920. And then by January 21, Roger Babson came back again, and he said, "Well, gentlemen, if you remember a year ago, I warned you that within 1 year you'd be in the throes of the worst depression our generation ever seen. I noticed many of you smiling." And he says, "It's now," he says, you know, how does he know? Why did he actually understand that? He says, "It's now midwinter," he said. "If I want to know what the temperature is now in this room, I go to the wall and look at the thermometer. If I want to know what it has been up to now, and the existing trends at the moment, I look at the recording thermometer. But if I want to know what the temperature in this room is going to be in an hour from now, I go to the source, which determines future temperature, and I go down to the boiler room and see what's happening down there. You gentlemen looked at bank clearings, indexes of business activity, stock car loading, stock market quotations, and that's what we're getting. That's what is being wheeled out every night on the news, to say that the recovery is happening." But notice what he says. I know we've read this before many times, but be aware of what he says, because this has an impact on the wisdom. When we're looking at the subject of a wise view of wealth and a wise view of wealth creation, then this is the wise view of wealth and the wise view of wealth creation. He says, "I go down to the boiler room and see what's happening down there. You gentlemen looked at bank clearings, index of business activity, stock car loading, stock market quotations. You looked at the thermometer on the wall. And I looked at the way people as a whole were dealing with one another. I looked at the source which determines future conditions. And I found that the source may be defined in terms of righteousness. When 51% or more of the whole people are reasonably righteous in their dealings with one another, we're heading into increasing prosperity. When 51% of the people become unrighteous in their business dealings with their fellows, then we're heading through bad times economically." Now that basically is Mr. Armstrong brought out to us on a number of occasions, is something that we need to keep in mind. It's to do with righteousness. Now turn over to Matthew 22. Matthew 22. Because when we're looking at righteousness, and we look here in the Pharisees heard that he put the Sadducees to silence in verse 34. This is Matthew 22, verse 35 now. It says, "Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him, saying, Master, which is the great commandment of the law? And the commandments are the Ten Commandments. So they obviously were looking for one of the Ten Commandments being cited, but in fact he didn't. Jesus said unto him, because the law, the Torah, is much broader than just the Ten Commandments. The Torah is, it literally means the pointing, the way. And it also refers to the first five books of the Bible in which the law is expounded, or initially introduced. Master, which is the great commandment of the law? And Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and the great commandment. So that's the first commandment. And the second is like unto it. So he immediately gave the second. He says, look, you've got two basic commandments. The first one is clearly the first, that you love towards God, which covers the first four commandments. And then the last six. And the second is like unto it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. The entirety of the scriptures, quite frankly, but certainly the law and the prophets. What the law and the prophets had to say to us. So when you're judging righteousness, and you're judging what, in fact, the law, because the law defines righteousness, when you're judging righteousness, then we need to go ahead and look at the loving of neighbor as ourself, and loving God with heart, soul, and might. So let's go back to Proverbs then. And we'll put a marker, I would say, in Proverbs 10, although we'll deal with a few of the other markers, the other areas as well, but Proverbs 10. Although we're not, quite frankly, I'm not planning to go back and forth too much in this sermon. It's more, we'll stick within Proverbs itself. But you know, loving our neighbor as ourself, this is the gauge that is needed for righteousness. This is what we're looking for. We're looking for proverbs which are to do with wealth, and proverbs which to do with our right approach to wealth, our right approach to the subject of wealth. Now, the construction of the proverbs, what we're looking at, the construction of each, you know, when you get a proverb, you can say where something is synonymous, where you get one like the evil bow before the good. This is Proverbs 14:19. The evil bow before the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. In other words, it repeats itself. Emphasis by effect, by repeating itself. That's one way of construction of a proverbs. The other construction, and the other obvious one, is a contrast between two things. The second clause presents, because they come in two parts. They invariably come in two parts. So you have a first part and the second part of the book, to the actual proverb. Sometimes it repeats itself. Sometimes it contrasts. A merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. So the contrast is medicine on one side with a merry heart, and the drying the bones on the other, which is, again, medically not very good thing to have, with a broken spirit. And that is a contrast between the two. You then get an expansion on the subject, where a subject is expanded and extended. The discretion of a man defers his anger, and it's his glory to pass over a transgression. So the discretion of a man defers his anger. In other words, you stop being angry with somebody, and you go above and beyond. You go beyond that, and you actually it actually becomes his glory. It's not just discretion, but it becomes his glory to pass over a transgression, to overlook a transgression. So you can see how that, in fact, is a continuation. It's an expansion on the subject matter in hand. And then you have a metaphor or a simile, which is defined by the use of as or like. Is the definition of a simile or a metaphor. As vinegar to the teeth, and as smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to them that send him. So it's an as or a like being used there, where you're giving an indication. You know, you're a sluggard to go on an errand, It's as if you get vinegar, and you ever turn around picking vinegar on your teeth, your teeth go all sandpapery, don't they? It's really, they're not very nice at all. And there's smoke to the eyes. Have you ever had a bonfire that you've got going really well? There's plenty of smoke going off, and it's blowing away from you, and then the wind changes. And your smoke goes in your eyes, and your eyes run. And it's certainly a very graphic description. And this comparative metaphor or simile, where the use of as or like, as vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to them that send him. These are the four basic structures that you're going to find within the book of Proverbs. So what we'll do, let's actually start over into Proverbs chapter 1 and look at this subject, the subject matter of the view of wealth and the actual gaining of wealth, and how you balance that with the commandments of God and the thinking of God, and how it's not just balanced like in that way, but you go against the commandments of God, you go against the thinking of God, and you've got major problems. And you see this over in chapter 1. It says in verse 12, verse 10, pick it up. My son, if sinners entice you, consent you not. If they say, come with us and let us wait for blood, lurk privately for the innocent without a cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down to the pit. And we'll find all precious substance. We'll fill our houses with spoil. In other words, they're saying, look, we can get all this wonderful money. We can get this wonderful wealth. Now, these specifically appear to be robbers that are doing this, but the biggest robbers are not the robbers that go around with a stocking over their head. The biggest robbers are the ones that go around with a computer under their belt, and they basically go and break into banks and download billions, but they don't breaking into the banks isn't done necessarily illegally. It's done with the sanction of the banks, the breaking into the bank accounts of various individuals and downloading the money into the bank's coffers and gaining their bonuses. You know, there are many, many ways of saying that we'll swallow them alive as the grave, and whole as those that go down to the pit, and we'll find all precious substance, we'll fill our houses with spoil. And believe you me, you find that a great deal. But as it says, and goes on to say, it says, surely, in verse 17, in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lie in wait for their own blood, and they lurk privately for their own lives, and so are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which takes away the life of the owner thereof. Now that is a biblical certainty. You know, all you have to do is watch. Keep marking there. Turn over. I said I wasn't going to go back and forth very much, but let's go over to Revelation 13 and just remind ourselves of what it says in Revelation 13. Because in the middle of this section, we dealt with Revelation 12 about the church, and you're now going into Revelation 13 about the false system, the false church, the false Babylonian system. And he reminds us, Christ reminds us, that if any man has an ear, in verse 9, Revelation 13, verse 9, if any man has an ear, let him hear. He that leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He that kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. And this is what here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Now this is the wisdom that we're going to need in the future. These people who think they're getting away with things are not going to get away with them. They're simply not. These people who are currently robbing the general population, the bankers that are robbing the general population, who think they're getting away with things, are not. And it says, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lay in wait for their own blood. This is Proverbs 1, verse 18. They lurk privately for their own lives. The same basic principle applies. And so in this time, when we need wisdom, we need to be able to understand this. You know, the chances are we're going to lose quite a fair amount of money over the next few weeks, months, years. If we've got some savings, if we've got a pension or whatever, there's a very, very good chance we'll lose it. Very good chance we'll lose it. we've got stocks and shares, there's almost a certain chance that they're going to go down in value initially. Then they'll go up in value. The reason why they're going up in value is the money's going down in value. It's not that the shares are going to go up in value. It's the money gets less, and therefore you pay more money for the share. But we're going to see this. This is going to take place. Why? Because there's a basic unrighteousness there. And the idea that they're going to get away with this unrighteousness is not going to be the case. And we can go into the book of Proverbs, we can see what it says, and we can see the wisdom, and we also need to understand that we must not have the same mentality as the people that are being talked about here, that say, let's swallow them up live in the grave and go on into shady deals ourselves, because it's unrighteousness. It's an unrighteous way of doing it. And we'll go on, you know, depending on how much time we've got, we'll go on and understand understand a little bit more about, let's face it, they use the term karma in Oriental circles. This karma is a philosophy, part of the philosophy of the, somebody. The Orientals, they believe in karma. And basically, the karma is what goes around comes around. That's what karma is. It's what goes around comes around. You dish out something to somebody, it'll come back on you. And this is a principle that God also says, he says, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lay in wait for their own blood. They're trying to trap other people. They're trying to gain wealth and push other people down, and it'll come back at them. You can guarantee it. You know, he who slays with a sword must be slain with a sword. He who leads into captivity, and they're leading into captivity, they'll be led into captivity. So we need to understand that and keep that in our minds. So let's go to Proverbs chapter 10 and start actually going through some of the Proverbs themselves. But what I think I might do is if I go through in the New International Version, I don't like using that version very much, but in Proverbs it does tend to give a more modern version of the Proverbs, so that we can actually read that. So in Proverbs chapter 10 verse 2 it says, treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. And verse 3, the Eternal will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casts away the subject of the wicked. And in the NIV, it says, ill-gotten treasures are of no value, but righteousness delivers from death. The Eternal does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the cravings of the wicked. Now again, these are living words. These are meaningful words. That basically, if somebody's treasures are ill-gotten, it is the treasures of wickedness. And this is what we're finding. Within society at this present time, the treasures that they've got are treasures of wickedness. The treasure of wickedness that they've used devious means. They've made various instruments that they have devised. They've had mortgage interests that they've used. And, you know, usury, the use of interest, is forbidden by God within Israel. It shouldn't be used. And yet they use it. The entire system is built on it. It says that treasures of wickedness profit nothing. So eventually they are... I mean, what's going to happen in the tribulation? What will actually take place? The tribulation, or the end time, from this point forward, all the way through, it may look as if they're massing their billions or their trillions or whatever they're massing, but the whole system is going to come apart. The whole wheels are going to come off. Even though the chances are the whole system will come crashing down initially, which will trigger the rise of Europe. Europe itself is not going to survive. It says that the merchants of the earth see Babylon, this system that they've made, with the smoke of her burning, and they won't, the dead come in. And the entire system is going to come crashing down. The entire earth is going to be leveled with earthquakes. The entire earth will be leveled with hail. There will be nothing left. The entire system is going to be gone. So the treasures of wickedness profit nothing. Not just a little bit, nothing. There will be nothing left. And of their system, the Babylonian system will finish. But righteousness delivers from death. If we go to God and we ask for his help to develop righteousness, we develop the character that's necessary, that will deliver us. God will deliver us. But the fact that we are his children, you know, they shall be mine, says the Eternal, when I make up my jewels. And I will spare them, the man spares his own son. And that is what it's all about. It's righteousness. It's talking often one with another. It's recognizing the fear of the Eternal is the beginning of wisdom. It's all having the correct fear of God. The Eternal will not allow the soul of the righteous to famish, it says in the NIV. It doesn't let the righteous go hungry. He's not going to do that. But he thwarts the craving of the wicked. Even though they have masses of money, he will actually actively thwart it, thwart the very craving itself. Okay, chapter 11, verse 4. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Or riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death, as it says in the King James. And again, the same basic sentiment, and something that, again, we're going to need to hang on to into the future. We will see massive amounts of money being made by wicked people. We are going to witness that in the world in the years ahead. We just will. Down in verse 17, the merciful does good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubles his own flesh. See, it talks about in Isaiah that every man holding his hands on his loins, and they are going to, as it says, merciful does good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubles his own flesh. They're not going to escape, and it's not going to be the case. Verse 17, let's see. A kind man benefits himself, but a cruel man brings himself harm. So if you're kind, and again, it's going to be ever so easy to adopt the same attitude of mind. Not only is it going to be easy to adopt the same attitude of mind because of what is going on in the world, but the spirit that is actually producing what is going on in the world will be being pumped out. And we will have that same spirit that we can get tuned into if we're not careful. And if we're tuned into that same spirit, we'll be having the same kind of feelings and thinking. But it says the merciful is something that we need to go to God and ask for, is for mercy. Not just for mercy from him, but that we are merciful, that we have that mercy. And being kind, a kind man benefits himself, but a cruel man brings himself harm. And that's something that's going to happen as we go into the future. Proverbs 11, verse 23. It says, the desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. There is he that scatters and yet increases, and yet he that withholds more than is fitting, but it tends to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that waters shall be watered himself. He that withholds corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that sells it. Notice each one of those is a proverb. Each one of those verses is a proverb with a with two parts to the specific proverb, but they're also in context. They're dealing with the subject matter themselves. And it says in verse 23 in the NIV, it says, the desire of the righteous ends only in good, but the hope of the wicked only in wrath. One man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He that refreshes others will himself be refreshed. People curse the man who hoards grain, but blessings crown him who is willing to sell. So we see again, it's a liberal soul that is being made fat. And we, in this environment, in an environment where people are out for number one, and as we move forward into the future, that is the environment we're going to have. We're going to have to go to God and ask for help. If we are going to be wise, we're going to have to apply these verses. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. It scatters and increases, and yet there's that which holds more than fitting, but it tends to poverty. It's very easy to want to hold on to everything ourselves, And yet we, again, it's the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that waters shall be watered also himself. It is a living law, it's a living principle to being outgoing. Given, it shall be given to you. Pressed down, running over, that's what Christ said. This is where, you know, this is the same concept that you're finding here within the Proverbs. It's the same wisdom. It goes against the grain. It goes against the understanding that you have in the world. The world's understanding, I remember talking to one of our grandchildren one time, which is better, the way of give or the way of get? And the answer was get, immediately. Because that's the natural way. The natural way is the way of get. It was a grandchild that was not in the church, had not been sitting in church. He was about five, wasn't he? So something like that. No, it is. It's a case that the natural way is not to be liberal, and you know, not to give. And yet Christ says, give and it will be given to you. Pressed down, running over. And to do that, and to be generous, is not natural. It's something we have to go to God for, ask him for. And yet it says in verse 28, it says that he that trusts in riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. What is our riches at this present time? Is it gold? I mean, looks as if it's going to be the next standard. It looks as if you can predict the future at all, it looks as if China is currently amassing gold like there's no tomorrow. And why are they doing that? And the indication is, as far as the trend spotters prognosticate, is that eventually it will put its currency as a gold standard currency. And the moment it does that, the dollar and the pound and the euro will fall like a stone. And it's actually buying up buildings. It's got a building in New York with a vault underneath it. And if you can think of it, if they put gold into that vault and they say that their currency is going to go ahead and be backed up by the gold, then anybody that has their currency can come to that shop and get gold for that currency. What other currency can you do that with? There is no other currency that you can do that with that I know of. And yet if it does, then it'll seize the market. And that seems to be the way in which they're heading, what they're angling for. We'll have to see. But he that trusts in riches shall fall. So even if you put your money in that gold, if you put your money into that currency, that's where our trust is, it'll fall. The whole lot is going to come down. The whole system is going to be destroyed. But the righteous shall flourish as a branch. Why? Because the righteous is being fed with a spiritual food, with a spiritual sustenance. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. In chapter 13, verse 11, chapter 13, verse 11, what's it saying? Dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. And that's true. That is true. That if you get it by vanity, and it's going to be diminished, it says in the King James, but he who gathers by labour shall increase. And certainly, this is what so many of us lose sight of. You get these get-rich-quick schemes, and I've seen them in the church, that people have had them in the church. They reckon they're going to be making their megabucks by their clever instruments that they've got to actually draw in money to themselves. But that's not the way it works. It's he that gathers by labour shall increase. It's by hard work, by graft, getting up in the morning, going out and consistently doing a good day's work. Yes, better to work for yourself, but at least it needs a consistency of work. To be able to do that. That's how wealth is amassed. Richard Branson didn't get where he is by a get-rich-quick scheme. Dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. I remember reading about his initial foray into the market as far as flights are concerned, Virgin Atlantic. And what he did is he found himself stranded in an airport somewhere, I think on a holiday destination. And so he and all these other passengers were completely stranded. They couldn't get home because somebody had gone broke. And so he went up to the desk of this one hire company and said, how much to hire an aeroplane to fly from here to Heathrow? And he got a price, and he added 10, 20, 30% on top of it. And he actually went and started selling shares in this, not shares, but his tickets on his aeroplane to the people that he knew were looking for a flight home. And they raised enough, and that was his start of Virgin Atlantic. But it was done with a clever idea. But he has to then build it from that point. But wealth governed by vanity, dishonest money dwindles away. But he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. That is the way it works. That is the way it operates. And all the time, you notice in chapter 14, verse 31, he that oppresses the poor reproaches his maker. But he that honours him, he that honours God, in other words, has mercy on the poor. And we need to make sure we, as these times go ahead, and as we find ourselves moving into the difficult times financially, there are going to be poor within the society, far more than there is at the moment. And those of us that have money, and again, how long we will have that money for is debatable, but we do need to have mercy on the poor. It is a basic principle. Now, unfortunately, with the advent of the internet, you get people begging for money all across the world that you have no means of verifying whether they are genuine or not. And we've been stung several times, church-wise, by that. And I'm not talking about people that we have never met or have never known. I'm talking about people that we have met and have known, and yet we've been stung by them. So a certain amount of wisdom and common sense is necessary on doing this. You've got to make sure that the things are in place to verify the fact that they are poor, and it's not the result of purely themselves trying to extract money from a wealthy source. But he that oppresses the poor reproaches his maker. And the proverb is certainly something that we need to make sure that we have regard to. Chapter 15, verse 16. Better is a little with a fear of the eternal than great treasure and trouble therewith. You know, people can gain a huge amount of money, with great treasure, and yet they have marriages that are on the rocks, and they're looking at chaos within their lives. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than stalled ox and hatred therewith. You know, even vitamin-wise, even mineral-wise, if you have a meal with some, you know, sit down to a meal, an enjoyable meal with somebody, which is very simple, and yet you enjoy your conversation, you're relaxed, you're enjoying the company, quite frankly, you will have the less need for minerals, you have less need for vitamins than if you're under stress. So if you sit down and there's contention in the household, and there's contention and difficulties in that household, you actually need more vitamins, you need more minerals to be able to cope with the stress. So it's not only true mentally, it's true physically as well. The better is a little with fear of the eternal, and great treasure and trouble therewith. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. And that's in the NIV, it says, better is a little with the fear of the eternal than great wealth with the turmoil. Better a meal of vegetables where there's love than a fatted calf with hatred. And that is true, absolutely true. And something, again, we need to keep in mind. Having a tranquil mind. If we've got problems in our homes, if we've got problems in our marriages, or between ourselves and our families, our children, we need to get those sorted out. We need to get them sorted. We need to not leave it festering. not leave it growing. Because every time you sit down for a meal, you're going to need more vitamins and minerals than somebody you need to otherwise. And this is something that we need to make sure that is the case. And it says in chapter 16, verse 8, and notice what would be the flavour of these, the proverbs I'm selecting out. It's to do with wealth. It's to do with the contrasting of wealth and righteousness. The fact that you are rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. No, somebody who's rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, great treasure, but trouble therewith. A stalled ox, but hatred therein. And if somebody's looking at that and you're saying that they are rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, that's crazy. That's crazy. You've got to make sure that the spiritual aspects of the relationships that we have are in place so that when we sit down at a meal time, there isn't contention, there isn't friction, that we enjoy one another's company. It's not enough to just have an armed camp, but we enjoy one another's company. That is all part of what in fact God intends for us to do. It's interesting, if you do another study that's worthwhile, is to go through the New Testament. I just notice how many of the instructions that Christ gives are given over a meal, are given as he's eating something. And you'll find that, not all of them, by any means, but feeding the 5,000, there's a meal. And instruction is given when he goes to the Pharisees, it's a meal. It was meals in many cases that he used for giving instruction. In chapter 19, verse 17. But what I want to do, really, is to make sure that we understand how we go through this, because this is probably the last in the series. I don't see me going through Proverbs over and over and over again in different way, dicing it in different directions. But I wanted to just simply go through it once with a subject which is pertinent to all of us and show how, in fact, we need to go through the Proverbs, here a little, there a little, precept upon precept, line upon line, so that we can then take, when we find ourselves in problems with wisdom, with understanding something, with having wisdom, that we can actually do the same. We can go through the Proverbs. And going through the Proverbs multiple times like this, you'll also be reading the others that are not applicable for that particular instance, and yet they are still going into the mind, they're still going into the memory. Even though we're skipping over them, there's still things that will be important to us. But it says in chapter 19, verse 17, he who has pity on the poor lends to the Eternal, and he that has given, and that which he has given, he will pay again. Or in the NIV, he who is kind to the poor lends to the Eternal, and he will reward him for what he's done. And so, in other words, you're lending to the Eternal if you're having pity on the poor. And as I say, we're going to have more and more people that are poor, that are going to need help. And where we can verify that somebody is indeed poor, that they do in fact need help, that we know them, we're close by enough, and we have the means to do it, we should do what we can. We should do what we can, and not to worry unduly, because, as it says, and that which he has given, will he, that's the Eternal, pay him again. It will be paid. God will be the one that pays us back. We don't need to worry and fret about it so much. As it says in chapter 21, verse 13, whoever stops his ear at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. So at this time, as we're going into this difficult period, as the banks collapse, the stock markets collapse, and the difficult time that we are about to enter, if we stop our ears at the cry of the poor, then we'll cry ourselves and we'll not be heard. So it is important. As I say, I hesitate in the internet age to say that carte blanche, because that's not the way it is. You've got to have safeguards in place. You've got to make sure that the money is getting to the right place. It's not going down into somebody's pocket to buy their next mobile phone or whatever else is being used for. But chapter 22, verse 1. A good name is rather to be is more desirable. Let's read it from the NIV. A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. Rich and poor have this in common. The Eternal is the maker of them all. And a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. And humility and the fear of the Eternal bring wealth and honor and life. So, again, there's a link between them all, but a good name is more desirable. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. Do we do that? Is that something that we value? Is our good name more important to us than how much money we've got in the bank? Helping other people, is that something that we try and do and make sure that we do? It's something we need to try and do. The rich and the poor meet together. The Eternal is maker of them all. We're all coming from the same source, and we're going to the same place at the end of our lives as well. The rich and the poor, whether we're rich, whether we're poor, it makes no difference. And yet a prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself. And that, again, is part of what we're doing by going through the Book of Proverbs and trying to understand what a little bit more about wisdom as applied to work, as applied to money, as applied to wealth. Because, again, Laodicea is prophesied to say, the rich increase with goods and have need of nothing, and yet not realize they're poor, blind, miserable, and naked. And as you go through the Book of Proverbs, this certainly does come out. And it says in verse chapter 23, says, do not labor, verse 4, do not labor to be rich. Cease from your own wisdom. Will you set your eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings, and they fly away as an eagle towards heaven. So often we put our mind and our heart on things that just simply have no value. In today's world, this is doubly true. This is doubly true because we look upon the new next computer in the series as being next. I mean, a 386. Would you take a 386 today? Nobody wants a 386 today. But when they first came out, everybody wanted a 386. 8088, wasn't it, the one before that? But the 386, I mean, that was the bee's knees. But now, I mean, they don't even need a computer, they need a tablet. And on it goes. You simply, it says in the NIV, do not wear yourself out to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. Leave the 386 on the shelf if you need to. Cast but a glance at riches and they're gone, for they'll surely sprout wings and fly off the sky like an eagle. In other words, just leave it a few years, and that super-duper computer that you really, really wanted, and if you had it, that would be the height of luxury and everything else. It sprouts itself wings and it flies away. Apart from the fact you can drop it, which also is the case. But in today's society, this is doubly true, as I say. And chapter 24, verse 11. If you forbear to deliver them that... Well, let's see what it says in 24, verse 11. Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. If you say, but we knew nothing about this, does not he that weighs the heart perceive it? In other words, if you know something, if somebody is going in a direction... and he's going to be in a direction that's really going to hurt them, and we do nothing about it, we don't warn them, then there's a problem. God can see. God's aware. And again, just pure wealth, just pure riches, pure the next computer is not going to, or the next mobile phone, that's not where it's at. We've got to make sure that it's put in a right context of righteousness. If you forbear to deliver them that are drawn to death and those that are ready to be slain, if you say, behold, we knew it not, doesn't he that ponders the heart consider it? And he that keeps your soul, does not he not know it? And shall not he render to every man according to his works? The fear of the Eternal is the beginning of wisdom. So we need to make sure that we do fear God, because God is aware of what's going on. We can't hide things from God. You can't live a life that hides as if we're hidden in some way. Chapter 28, verse 8. He that increases his wealth by exorbitant interest. And now, that's not true. In the NIV, it says, he that increases his wealth by exorbitant interest amasses it for another who will be kind to the poor. That is not what it says. It says, he that by usury and unjust gain increases his substance, he should gather it from him that is pities the poor. Usury is a form of unjust gain. If there's unjust gain in another way, as well, usury is not just exorbitant interest, it's usury itself. But he'll gather it from him that pities the poor. Then I say, when we're looking at today, we're looking at banks that are, in the entire financial system is built on a false premise. We need to understand that those that are gaining by that means will gather it for him that will pity the poor. Eventually, we will inherit the kingdom of God. And we'll have a position that will be so much higher than any of these bankers. And that if we pity the poor, if we put the first things first, if we put the spiritual side of life first. Chapter 28, verse 25. He that is of a proud heart stirs up strife, but he that puts his trust in the Eternal shall be made fat. He that trusts his own heart is a fool, but he whoever walks wisely he shall be delivered. So again, and even verse 27, he that gives to the poor shall not lack, but he that hides his eyes shall have many a curse. They're all linked together. As it says in the NIV, verse 25, a greedy man stirs up dissension, but he who trusts in the Eternal will prosper. He who trusts in himself is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom is kept safe. He who gives to the poor will lack nothing. But he who closes his eyes to them will receive many curses. So again, notice how each of those stands alone as a proverb, but each of those also are linked together within the same context. And I think we'll end pretty soon. We're running out of proverbs, aren't we? But notice also, if we end on the sayings of King Lemuel in chapter 31. It's not the sayings of King Lemuel, it's the oracles that his mother taught him. So probably Bathsheba is the one that is being discussed here. But in describing the wife of noble character, as it says here, the woman in verse 20, let's see, what's it actually say here? It says, she opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. Let's read the entire section. Let's read in the King James. We can end on that. Let's say, I hope it gives you an indication of what in fact we need to do is, as we come across things in our life where we need wisdom, where we go to God in prayer and ask him for the wisdom necessary, that we can use the book of Proverbs, that we use the book of Proverbs here a little, there a little, with stammering lips and another tongue, and precept upon precept and line upon line, and go through it in this way, extracting the information about that particular subject. And in extracting that information, we should also be reading around each passage. And as I say, you can cut and dice it dozens and dozens and dozens of different ways. And this is the way in which you extract the information from the book of Proverbs and gain the wisdom. But here it says, who can find a virtuous woman? For a price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts in her, so she shall have no need of spoil. She shall do good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. So here, you ladies, this is specifically directed for you, as to how to apply wisdom in actually governing the household and in doing what you need to as far as the household is concerned. She's like the merchant ships, she brings them food from afar. She rises also when it's yet night and gives food for her household and a portion to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hand she plants the vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her candle goes not by night. And notice also the structure that you're finding here. It's there's still proverbs being used. There's still two aspects always being used. She lays her hand to the spindle. Her hands hold the distaff. You see how it's repeating itself in a poetic way. She stretches out her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches forth her hands to the needy. Notice again what is taking place there, that she's looking after the poor. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with double garments. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates. He sits among the elders of the land. She makes fine linen and sells it and delivers girdles to the merchants. Strength and honour are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. And again, that is important, that she opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. We're seeing that as the aspect that is important. It's not just the physical aspect of being industrious, which again, you can go through the entire book of Proverbs looking for an industry and sloth, and you can extract the verses necessary. But she opens her mouth with wisdom, and her tongue is the law of kindness. She has a certain spiritual application of her life. She looks well to the way of her household. She eats not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also and praise her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but you excel them all. And so, as far as the Book of Proverbs is concerned, as I say, this will probably be the last one in the series, but I wanted to go through it, the actual Proverbs themselves, and just illustrate how we can take a subject and go through the book of Proverbs, extracting the Proverbs that apply in that specific case, and you can go ahead and do this in your own Bible study in exactly the same way. And it's important that we do, when we come across a problem where we need wisdom, this book has been given to us for that wisdom. And as we go towards the end time, let's finish with Daniel. Let's finish with Daniel. Daniel 12. Just remind ourselves of this. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked will do wickedly. And this is what we're going to find, and we're going to find this more and more as we go towards the end. The wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise, and if we use the book of Proverbs in the right way, and we go to God and ask for that wisdom, then we can have that wisdom, but the wise shall understand.